This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it's hour number two. Thanks for joining us on a Wild Card Monday. We got one more game tonight. The Rams and the Cardinals duking it out with the winner of this game heading to Tampa to take on Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. The 49ers, with their win against the Cowboys, and they were going to be the lowest seed, are heading to Green Bay to take on the Packers. That should be a really interesting game. But in the AFC, the Titans are going to get Cincinnati. And then, of course, you've got the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs meeting at Arrowhead Stadium. Really interesting, because when the Bills played Kansas City earlier this season, the Chiefs are struggling out of the gate. A little bit of a Super Bowl hangover, of course, losing to Tampa Bay. And I've said this many times, sometimes when you lose that championship game, you go into the next season and you're like, just get me to where we left off, because that's, you kind of want to make amends for the thing that is disappointing. And I think the Chiefs were struggling a little bit in that regard. And Tampa Bay did open up a door for how you could play Patrick Mahomes and how you could play this Kansas City team. So early in the season, when they lost to the Bills, and they lost pretty convincingly, it was 38-20. It was at a time where, you know, the Chiefs were 2-3. They weren't the dominating AFC team that could be at that moment be Buffalo. And both teams had their ups and downs, and the Kansas City Chiefs righted their ship. And now you're getting a matchup between two teams that met in the AFC Championship game. And in as we pointed out, this really does feel like the AFC Championship game. I mean, it's going to be the divisional round, and only one team is going to advance to face either Cincinnati or Tennessee. But that just does, it just feels slightly off, because these two teams have been showcased all season as, you know, two of the elite teams in the AFC. I think it's just fascinating. But to me, Tennessee, because I live in Nashville, the buzz about them is, of course, Derrick Henry arriving and getting back into that backfield. But I'd be really careful if I was Tennessee. Joe Burrow has got a different kind of moxie than I've seen young quarterbacks. This is a guy, again, he lived through a running through an SEC schedule and winning a national championship and all the pressure that it comes from being in the southeastern part of the United States when it comes to his college football career. He has a moxie that I would be careful if I were the Titans. This isn't a guy that's going to run out of gas or the moment's going to be too big. And he's dangerous. He's really dangerous. At least that's the AFC side. But we got Arizona and LA tonight. The winner, again, gets Brady and the Buccaneers. We have the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, we'll get to more analysis of the games that were going on this weekend. But this is the good, the bad, and the dumb. You've been waiting all weekend for it. So what's the good of the day?
Well, since everyone's been waiting all weekend for it, it's only proper that we have two, right?
Two goods
of the day?
Yeah, two goods of the day.
And I'll preface this also by saying the good, the bad, the dumb, very football heavy.
All right, very good.
So the first good of the day belongs to the Bengals.
For winning?
Who won a playoff game for the first time since 1991.
Yes.
A popular trivia question, or a popular thing, a joke maybe as well, has been, you know, did you ever see that text message about the Bengals winning a playoff game?
Right.
No, because texting came nearly 2 years after the last time the Bengals won a playoff game.
That's exactly right.
So Bengals Twitter sent out one text and one Twitter message and one Twitter message only. Send that text.
Very awesome. That is really cool. Good job, guys.
They had that typed out. Their finger was on the button, ready to fire it.
They couldn't wait. Couldn't wait. You saw people in the stands crying.
Yes.
That was incredible. Like, again, I get it. It's 31 years. It's fantastic.
I mean, you think about everything that's happened since 1991.
I know. I copied a picture on Twitter and posted it to Facebook of O.J. Simpson.
Oh, I thought that was brilliant.
Of Sam Weish and Boomer Esiason. At the end of the game.
I thought that was phenomenal. And I was like, that is unreal right there.
some people didn't get it. I was like, what? Has OJ lost his identity? Like, do you not recognize who that is?
I mean, you just think about that. He was, at that time, he was well on his way to being like the best commentator.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe not the best, but he would have gotten good opportunities.
He had a great life. He was doing movies. He was doing the commentary for NBC. He was like, I mean, he was a real celebrity. He was beyond just being an ex-athlete. He was heading into real Celebrityville. And, you know, obviously gone. But, yeah, that's the last time the Bengals won a playoff game was OJ on the sidelines doing actual interviews with the two people involved in it.
Yeah. Text messaging wasn't even a thing. I got a couple other ones. The average price of gas last time they won a game, $1.14.
$1.14.
Yeah.
Nice. I saw that during the pandemic, so it got low, but now it's back up to $3.
Yeah, Madonna's Justify My Love topped the Billboard 100. To the extreme, Vanilla Ice's album was number one.
Yeah, Vanilla Ice was pretty big back then.
And Home Alone was the number one movie at the box office.
Wow, amazing.
Just a couple tidbits of what was going on in last time the Bengals won a game, playoff game.
Seriously, as division rival, I've watched Cincinnati have pretty good teams. That's a really fun football team they got there.
Yeah.
All right, so what's the second good?
The second good of the day is a salty Troy Aikman. Who doesn't like a salty Troy Aikman?
Who doesn't?
So during the, I don't know if it was towards the conclusion Bucks-Eagles. I mean, let's face it, the conclusion to Bucks-Eagles, I think, began in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Maybe second.
Right.
I don't know, depending on when you're watching. Joe Buck is talking about the game coming up next.
And Troy, and that game coming up, which is on CBS, which is the Dallas Cowboys hosting the San Francisco 49ers. We saw San Francisco with that overtime win in L.A. last weekend. That's going to be a good game.
It's going to be a great game. A really good game. I think there's a lot of people that would like to be calling that game. But should be a lot of fun.
Excellent.
I wonder who he was talking about.
Well done. I mean, again, I'm in the business, and I should know this, but how did CBS land that particular game? How come Nance and Romo weren't in Buccaneer territory?
That's a great question.
Like, how did they divvy up the booty?
Did they think that maybe Brady was a bigger story than Cowboys Niners?
Well, no. The NFL made the choice.
No, I know. Oh, well, they did.
Yeah, because Fox couldn't have made that choice because that would be unfair to CBS.
Yeah,
because CBS had the Bills Patriots game, right?
Yep.
And then one of the NFC games is being taken by ABC.
NFC game was taken by Fox and CBS.
No, yeah, I know, but there was six games.
Yeah,
NFC game has been taken by ABC.
Yeah, which is Monday Night Football.
Right, and then you had Iron Eagle in Buffalo, so CBS had the Buffalo Patriots game. And then you had, who was doing the Cincinnati game? Was that CBS? Was that CBS 2? No, that was NBC. So NBC got two games.
Yeah.
Right, NBC got two.
Everyone
games.
Got two games.
CBS got two. So how in the world did Fox end up not getting their number one team to not get Cowboys Niners?
Yeah, that's.
I gotta look into that because I really am curious as to he's right. Why weren't they at that game?
Yeah, instead they gave it to the other former Cowboys quarterback who, like you had pointed out, is getting a little bit overrated now.
Who, Tony Romo?
Yeah.
Yeah, completely. I pointed that out on Twitter yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm getting kind of sick and tired of his act. I think he needs to tone it down a little bit. He's too all over the place. He's not concise with what he's saying. And then he just kind of mumbles. Not mumbles, but I used to call it diarrhea of the mouth. It's just a terrible term. But you know what I mean? We just keep talking. And you're just like, and I'm telling you right now, Jim, I think what happens is that play should be run like this, but it could be run like this, and then he could punt, or maybe he should go for it, because if he goes for it, they might get a first down, but if they punt, then the other team will have the ball, and you just got to go, slow down,
yeah. You said the same thing five times already.
Calm down, down, and get your points accurate, and get them precise, and don't just talk to talk. That's what Romo. I got to talk more about Romo later because he was really all over the place.
He was,
I agree with Aikman. The number one Fox team should have been at this game rather than at the 2-7 game. It should have been the other team. I would have done that whole thing differently. I really would have done that whole thing differently. I would have done. NBC. Okay, NBC's had two. I got it. I know what happened. NBC got two games. There's six games.
Yeah.
NBC got two games. They got the two AFC games. Right?
Yep.
So CBS did not get two AFC games. So then they had to give CBS a game. And I wonder, because they were giving an AFC game to NBC, they said, CBS, go ahead and choose. And CBS got to choose. And they took the better matchup. They took the Cowboys.
Well, is Fox getting the, who has the Super Bowl this year?
NBC.
NBC, okay.
Yep.
So it's not, that's not the, yeah. I was thinking maybe they were making a makeup for them.
So whatever the NFL.
Fox only had one game this weekend.
Yes.
And the game that they were given was Brady against
right
the
there.
Eagles.
Yep, exactly. Because NBC got two, ABC, ESPN got one, CBS got the Cincinnati game, the Buffalo New England game, and then they also got the Cowboys. Niners, and Fox was left with the one game left out of all of the, because the NFL decided who was going to play Sunday night.
Yeah.
So they put Kansas City Steelers Sunday night. That automatically was going to NBC. Then they also chose who was playing on Monday night. That automatically went to ESPN. So that left four games to be decided, and CBS got to basically pick after NBC took the Bengals and Raiders off there.
Did they maybe put, names in a hat?
Yeah, maybe that's the case.
Yeah. It's like, all right, CBS, you're up first. Which game do you want?
Exactly.
You got it.
All right, what's the dumb of the day?
We're at the bad.
Oh, the bad. I'm sorry.
The bad, which has a tinge of good. Okay.
All right.
Because I don't want to make you all feel bad. But the bad of the day is our final Novak Djokovic update.
Yeah, I know that. Just all of the football that came down the pipe too, and I was like, "Oh goodness."
Well, a little bit later than I thought because I thought Australia was 7 days in front of us, that we would have found out this information earlier on in the weekend, but apparently not. But if you didn't hear, Novak Djokovic lost his appeal to have his visa reinstated. He has been deported. Novak Djokovic currently is back home in Serbia.
He can't play in the Australian Open.
He's out. He will not defend his title. Now, the other caveat to this, too, is that he might be in danger of missing out on the French Open.
Uh-oh.
Because the French Open has tightened their vaccine laws.
What about Wimbledon? Are they doing that, too?
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Maybe.
New York? He can't. If Kyrie Irving can't play in New York, Novak Djokovic can't play in New York.
Maybe he's hoping that, COVID is gone by the summertime. Who knows?
Maybe so.
But maybe Novak doesn't play in a major at all this season.
If you're Novak Djokovic, now he's claimed he's got a health issue that he can't take the vaccine for, right?
But he has no documentation to prove it.
But he has no documentation to prove it. But at this point, this is the hill you're dying on, right?
Yeah.
You're not getting the vaccine. Like, if you can't play in the French Open, don't go, well, now I'll take the vaccine. Like, this is faking a stroke at a party, right? Once the ambulance comes, you are all in. You have got to keep it going. Novak Djokovic now has to be like, I can't get the vaccine no matter what it costs me.
Yep.
No matter what it costs me, I can't get the vaccine.
Yeah, if I lose sponsors.
I am on top of the hill. I'm fighting it, but I cannot get it.
Yeah, you can lose sponsors. Maybe you don't ever get that one extra major that eclipses. I think he needs one more to get above Roger and Rafa Nadal.
Too bad. If you can't get it, just stick to your guns, Novak.
But, Tony, like I said, with every dark cloud, there is a silver lining to the story. We had talked about Netflix is going to be following the PGA Tour.
Yes.
And with the guys who did Drive to Survive.
Yep.
Apparently, those same guys, that same production company, is following the WTA and ATP Tour. Which means they've been there the entire time that Novak was going through this. So you're going to get a hour-long show, probably nothing but Novak.
I might be in on this. I might want to watch this. If it's well put together and entertaining, I might want to watch
this. Yeah, I mean, it's by the same company who does Drive to Survive, so.
It's going to be good.
I just want to see the room.
Ah, me too.
The windowless cell that he had demanded.
Right. What was he in? All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day has got to go to Cowboy fans.
Oh, yeah.
From becoming instant memes because of all the sad faces. I mean, it looked like a college football game, really.
It
with
really
did. Everybody getting pulled out of the stands of people just crying, bawling their eyes out. People just, you know, disgusted. All the way up until the very end where they were throwing trash at the refs.
At the refs. And then that was interesting because Prescott thought they were him. They were throwing him at players.
And he said, players, you know, said these fans need to be better.
Yeah, and then they said, "Oh no, they were throwing up the refs." And he goes, "Well, good on them."
Yeah,
yeah, like switched it instead of saying, "No, it's bad to throw things on the field no matter what." He was like, "Nah, if you want to throw them at the refs, I don't care."
I'm hoping today, Cowboy fan realizes that it wasn't the refs' fault for that end of the game fiasco.
That team stunk. That team played terrible.
Yeah,
that team was better than what they showed up. They showed up with on Sunday.
I mean, given like we pointed out earlier, given opportunity, handed opportunity over and over and over again.
If Dak Prescott had gotten a playoff at the end of the game, what percentage do you think, given the way they played, he would have scored a touchdown?
I'm going sack.
Yeah, I'm going me too. Sack or massively incomplete.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Like, don't think that if you had gotten that playoff, Cowboy fan, that was in the end zone. Like, that was not going to – no. Not
no,
at all.
Because he didn't give himself enough time to kind of –
It never was like that game. It was
to
never
to figure stuff
feeling,
out, so.
Yeah, it was yuck.
That end of the day, Cowboy fan.
Exactly. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Coming up, more thoughts on the NFL playoff weekend, including tonight's Arizona Rams game as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I just got a request on Facebook from Robert that we should have Vontae Hill on. Now that the Niners have won. And again, it's because of this Charlie thing. I love it.
We'll work on it towards the end of the week. I'm sure he'll come back on.
I think he'll come back on. He was that good. He was really good. He was the guest I thought about the most. Of all the guests we had over the weekend, he was the guest I thought about the most in terms of how amazingly confident they were. Like, everybody was pretty good with their teams. Like, everyone was pretty – like, even Levin Reed was like, hey, the Patriots do this, this, and this. But he also was very cautious. Like, hey, there's some things here.
Yeah, and he hit the nail on the head, too, when he said that Mac Jones has hit the wall.
Right,
and
right,
you could
exactly.
see that in the game.
See
that
a little
all
bit
of
that,
a sudden
yeah.
there was a, you could see that it was a rookie quarterback in the playoffs going, oh my God, what
but
am I doing?
But he was also
here?
Up against a like he was trying to come back in a game that was getting out of hand,
yeah.
like offensively. But everybody kind of was like a little okay, you know. Here's even our Cincinnati guest who I thought was fantastic last week was like, yeah, there's some still issues that this team. But Vontae Hill was really very confident that
he was all in.
The matchup just worked for San Francisco, that there was something about the way San Francisco plays football that he felt like could be, you know, could exploit whatever Dallas did particularly well. So, yeah, he was probably the one I was thinking about the most throughout this weekend. All right, I want to touch on Romo. I don't put a lot of emphasis on broadcasters, even though I'm in the business, because, I mean, it's mostly about the games and the outcomes of the games. But I do have to say, I don't know why it's bothering me so much, but I think Tony Romo is either, one, being told by his bosses at CBS to just talk and talk and talk and talk. Like, why say two words when 10,000 will do? Or he is kind of believing that he's the number one guy doing this and he's the best doing this, so he's just sort of taking it to the other level. But, my God, he needs to slow down a bit. And here's what Ron and I have done this thing before where I can't believe these guys make as much money as they make. Again, make as much money as you want in America.
Yep.
God bless. I will never, ever say, you know, you're massively overpaid. If that's what the company wants to pay you, that's what the company wants to pay you.
And we need to preface this too. We need to be in on this side. We don't blame Romo for making that money.
Not at all. This is not his fault. Like, he's making $18 million a year. God bless him. He's
Someone
got a great
offers
agent.
You it, you take it.
But how does he have a spell on the people at CBS that he is a necessary product for what they're carrying? Like, why is it that why are they thinking that without him, they are losing out big time? Like, Romo is is when he first started, the thing that made Romo so great was the ability to predict what was going to happen next. He would really take you inside the mind of a quarterback and say, hey, he sees single coverage here. He is seeing coverage over here, or he's looking and this is what he was bringing you into what he sees defensively. And if it happened, it happened. And enough, more often than not, it did. So it made him, Romo Domus, right? I mean, it made him predicting the plays before it happened. But a lot of that has been lost to what I call, it's not, lazy's not the right term, but comfortable broadcasting. Saying things that are simply obvious, but saying it in a way that makes it look like you're doing a deep dive analysis, right? When you say, like, Dak Prescott's only got two options here. Either run the ball out of bounds, get the ball out of bounds, or find a short play to stop the clock. We all know that. Like, what I want to know is, how does he find what he's trying to do? Where does he go with that? Right? Like to me, if you're just saying basic football points, anybody could do that. Any former player can do that. You're on because you give us the extra level, and I feel like he's not necessarily bringing the extra level. And he gets way too excited with the game, which is kind of cool, and it's sort of relatable, but again, that's not what I want him to do. That's not the role I want him to play for me enjoying the broadcast. I don't need the color commentator to be as excited about the next play as I am. The color commentator's job is to set up what you're seeing. It's not to be a part of the journey with you, right? If I'm watching a play with no information as to what's going to happen next, and he's watching the play with no idea of what's going to happen next, one of us is getting paid $18 million to do that, and the other one isn't, right? That the reason that they're paying you $18 million for how many games are they broadcasting? 20? Maybe if that in the playoffs? And Thanksgiving and all of that. If they're paying you for that, they're paying you because you're going to say, guys, second and 12, this is what I anticipate seeing on this defensive side. Not being like, second and 12, Jim, it could be anything. It could be a pass. It could be a run. I got no idea. Like, slow down and calm down. Because your role in that seat is to not be me at home.
I'm curious to see, like, say the Cowboys got the ball spiked and they were able to run a play and say they scored a touchdown.
Right.
Would he have talked all the way through?
Yeah, that's a great point.
You know, because
he talks constantly.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, I mean, I'll point out Vin Scully, you know, legend and my personal fave. Like, you know, when Dwight Clark caught the touchdown against the Niners or against the Cowboys, you know, he goes silent. He lets the moment just live on your screen.
Right.
So it almost gives you that sense that you're actually in the stadium there. He did that during the 86 World Series. You know, when the ball got by Buckner, and just let it just play out. Just like, listen, guys, you guys have been watching this game all along. And this is your moment too. And I just have a feeling that if you had a Dwight Clark-esque catch by the Cowboys in the back of the end zone against the Niners and blah, 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 Romo would have been talking all the way through, and Nance probably would have been like trying to nudge him and like going, shut up.
Yeah. When I first got in this business, the radio station I was working at, we used to do, we were the flagship station for New Hampshire college basketball, which in Division II world in the 90s, they were a pretty, really good team. They would go to the NCAA playoffs, the, Elite Eight, all that stuff that Division II had. They were a really, really good team and very popular. And they were in their conference championship game. And we had a color commentator, former player, but same kind of thing, just always talking, always, you know, blabbing on and never really learning any constraint and understanding the moment. And in the final seconds of the game, a New Hampshire College kid had the basketball and they were down by two. And he's got the ball and he was a dead-eye three-point shooter. And he's dribbling towards the basket, but at the last second, he stops, backs up, and knocks down a three. And the play-by-play guy could not get a word in edgewise because the color commentator was screaming. We had a moment that we wanted to capture as a radio station and, like, highlight, but the color commentator just talked over it and destroyed the moment.
Yeah.
I'm worried that Romo will do that.
Yeah.
That Romo will ruin a brilliant play because he cannot stop talking. He cannot stop being overly excited. And that's not his role. It's not his role to be a super fan.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Again, what a fun weekend. Some good moments, some bad moments, some ridiculous moments. I want to get back to the Steeler game for a quick second. I went into it as a fan, but I also wanted to really see how good Kansas City was, because Kansas City, again, is, you know, that team that was, you know, we were wondering, like, they've owned the AFC for a while. Look, as a fan, I knew that the Steelers winning that game was going to be nearly impossible. All right. I really did. The Steelers just, we've seen some teams like, Philadelphia, right? Just like a 7 seed coming in with not a good record, but they do some interesting things and it makes you go, hey, how about this? The Steelers weren't that particular team. Like, the Steelers didn't really do anything well. They can't stop the run. Their defense was weak. Their quarterback is old. They can't get downfield. They don't even run the ball well. Offensive line is just loaded, had been loaded with some injuries and some bad play. It was quite an obstacle. How they got to the playoffs is still is amazing, but getting to the playoffs and going to beat Kansas City was really too much. So there was a part of me that went, do I enjoy this as a fan from the standpoint of I'm watching my team in the playoffs? Do I watch it as, oh my God, they're getting killed and this is embarrassing? Well, the two go hand in hand. For me, yes, I was watching the game with half of my brain as a fan, hoping for a miracle that maybe, just maybe, they could pull this off. But the other half was watching it because the Kansas City Chiefs, if you were to list the teams of all the teams in the NFL that have a chance to win the Super Bowl, the Chiefs are on top of the list. The Chiefs are near the top of the list, right? And facing Buffalo this weekend is, like we were saying earlier, is sort of an AFC championship game feel to it. I mean, these are really two really, really good teams. So again, part of me was looking at this game from the standpoint of Patrick Mahomes. This is, as I've been saying all along, while the Chiefs did struggle, when they get to the playoffs, are they going to be laser focused on becoming once again the AFC champions? And how are they going to look? They struggled early in the game, but when they got moving, they really, really got moving. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that the Steelers stink in a lot of different ways, and Buffalo is not going to stink in a lot of different ways. But, man, I can't believe that we are going to get these two games in the division, these two teams in the divisional round. This is no offense to Tennessee or Cincinnati, but this game has championship level written all over it like it did a year ago. And hats off to the Steelers again for making it into the playoffs. They took advantage of the new 7-team in the conference opportunity, won enough games even by the skin of their teeth. But for them to go to Kansas City, I just could not see a way to win. Even when TJ Watt scored and it was 7-0, I was genuinely excited about the fact that they were, you know, it scored, but they weren't moving the ball offensively enough for me to think that they were going to keep Patrick Mahomes off the field. Don't you get the feeling like if Patrick Mahomes is on the field enough that he figures you out, like he figures it out? He doesn't have very many bad games where he's out there for 30 minutes of play. Again, this game was split 30-30, which was really weird, but nevertheless, the Chiefs, and here's the, you know what really is scary? Think about this for a second, Ron. The Steelers and the Chiefs split right down the middle in terms of time of possession, and the Chiefs are so dangerous that Patrick Mahomes threw 5 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Like, and that's how dangerous they are.
And then look at the flip side, too, where you had how many times did the Steelers go 3 and out?
Right. You're right, exactly.
And it still ended up 30-30. To me, that just shows you how quickly the Chiefs work.
Yeah. They don't do like long 15-play drives that take 7 minutes off the clock.
Yeah.
They take advantage of what they can get from you, and a lot of times they can get a lot. So last night, again, there was a point where I knew the game was over. Like, I just knew the Steelers weren't going to come back.
So the beginning of the game.
Right. Right. And then I went, okay, now let's focus on how good this Chiefs team is, because this is the team Buffalo is going to be playing. And I just watched Buffalo Saturday night put on a historic exhibition, just an historic exhibition.
I know. That's why I said it before. I mean, it's a shame that this is a divisional round game.
I know.
Because I don't know. I just feel like whoever wins this game is moving on to the Super Bowl based on what we just witnessed.
Right.
You know, Bengals, Titans. I mean, sure, that's going to be a fun game. You know, but I don't know really. I don't think either of those two teams has what it takes to beat the Bills, or if the Bills play like that or beat the Chiefs.
I've been saying this all along, and until they prove me wrong, I'll be okay with saying I was wrong. But I just don't find Nissan Stadium an intimidating place with the Tennessee Titans there. It's not like Lambeau Field. It's not Arrowhead. It's not going to upstate New York. I mean, Nissan Stadium's going to be rocking. It's going to be loud. It's real. It's going to have all the things you want. But intimidation is not the word I think about. Those other stadiums are loud, too. Every stadium is loud. Okay, let's be honest. Every stadium's loud. But there's an extra level that happens at places like Lambeau, that place like in Buffalo, Dallas last night. Jimmy Garoppolo was talking about that. You know, hey, when he threw that interception, that place was deafening. And it holds a lot of people. It's kind of a semi-dome there. It's a dome, and it keeps everything intact, and you know, inside. But Nissan Stadium is not like that. It's very open. It's not going to feel like, you know, hey, this is a real intimidating place to play. And it wasn't even like that, to be honest with you. I wasn't here in Nashville at the time, but it wasn't even like that when Steve McNair was running the team and they were 13-3 and they were hosting games and the Music City Miracle and all of that. It still never felt like it was an intimidation place. You played good, you know, those were really good Titans teams that competed for championships, but it never felt like the stadium in and of itself. So whoever comes out of that game, and I think it will be Tennessee if Derrick Henry's rolling, they're going to be hosting two of the hottest teams in the NFL, one or the other, in Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen. But again, here's another thing, though. Look at the four teams that are remaining in the AFC right now, right? Three of them have very young quarterbacks that have a very, very big future ahead of them. That conference is loaded with young quarterback talent, loaded with it. And if Trevor Lawrence gets somebody in that Jacksonville team, the head coach of that Jacksonville team, that can really dial him in to playing the NFL position, the quarterback position in the NFL well, that's another one to add to the list. But like I told you last week, I think the Chargers have tremendous upside with Justin Herbert. You look down that list, Lamar Jackson was injured and hurt, and the Ravens aren't in the postseason. They should have been. Right. I mean, look, just that division alone with Burrow and Lamar Jackson. It should have been Baker Mayfield, but he's kind of gone by the wayside. Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert in the West. I mean, you could put Derek Carr in there. He's a little bit more older, but, you know, still Derek Carr got his team to the postseason. Josh Allen is probably one of the youngest, brightest stars, shot like a supernova into the sky. Like all of these young quarterbacks in the AFC, this is why last night's game was a big deal to me as a Steeler fan, because even though they got blown out of this game, that might be the last time I see the Steelers in the playoffs for a while. They've got some building to do, and it's not going to be easy in the division that now has another contender in Cincinnati. Baltimore's not going anywhere. I mean, Baltimore had a injury-riddled, COVID-affected season. They're not going anywhere. I mean, the Browns, yeah, they got a little bit of work to do. But those two teams could be elite AFC teams for quite a while. The Steelers may have found themselves on the back end of the postseason for a while until they find their Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, whoever. But again, this is why you look at the games this weekend and you see a Josh Allen and his contract, and you see Dak Prescott and his contract, and quarterbacks are worth the money. But when they don't perform, that's when you hear the criticism, right? That's when you hear the criticism. I mean, Josh Allen, no matter what happens to him, that game is immortal. That game he had against the Patriots is historic on an exponential level than we've seen NFL games. To think no one has ever done that, no team against the worst teams in the league has ever pitched a perfect offensive game
before. Yeah.
Ever. Bad defensive teams. Defenses that have been riddled with injuries or whatever. And you got to
escalate that too, because you did it in a playoff game
against Bill Belichick.
Yeah, arguably the greatest coach ever. Right,
the guy has a defensive game plan in the Hall of Fame. And you could argue that while that game he had for the Giants against Buffalo was one of the greatest defensive performances against that juggernaut of a team, I think what he did against the Rams was the most incredible defensive performance I've seen. That Rams team, Jared Goff, Sean McVay, boy genius, all of those things. And he shut that Rams team down to nothing. And you know what else? He shut the St. Louis Rams, greatest show on turf. He shut them down in the Super Bowl, the first one Brady won, Super Bowl 36. And he's the guy on the other end of an offense pitching that perfect game. He's the guy that's on the other end of that. Touchdown on every possession, no fourth downs, no punts, no turnovers. That's the guy who gave that up? It's probably going to be one of the biggest anomalies that you have in sports.
Yeah.
Because instead of a crappy Jacksonville team or a crappy Houston team or a crappy... take your crappy teams in all through the history of the league. And no team has ever been able to do what Buffalo did in a playoff game against one of the greatest masterminds of defensive ingenuity that we've ever seen.
And that's the thing, too. I mean, we talk about, you know, it's the perfect game for a team. You know, I mean, luck was on their side as well. I don't know. Maybe it's the amount of tables that were destroyed in Buffalo.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, we got to replicate. Only this amount of tables can be destroyed. I don't know. It's one of those things where you really sit back and it's like, they didn't even, like, make a mistake. Like, to me, not getting to fourth down is crazy.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Because they need, like, not even, like, a fourth and short where they felt like they had to go for it. Allen even admitted there was the one touchdown that looked like Montana to Clark, where he rolled out and then I think it was found Dawson Knox. He was trying to throw it away and just underthrew it enough to become a touchdown. So when you talk about luck being on your side, that's a perfect example of that. Right? And that was remarkable. There are a few moments, I feel like I've seen everything in this league. That was the one thing when I saw it, I said, this is unreal. This is something I just can't put my arms around. I can't grasp the magnitude of what this kind of win is against who it was against at the moment that it came. Right? I mean, all of those things that you think about, throwing it all together, you know, it's just remarkable. You know what it is? It's like Don Larson's perfect game. It comes in the World Series, right? I mean, it's like, of all the places to pitch it, you know, when you go to the mound all the time, right, as a pitcher all the time, and the one moment you get a perfect game happens to be in the World Series. Like the one moment this one game occurs, it could have come at any time, week 5 of 1982, week 7 of 1996, week 8 of 2001. Of all the times a game like that could have been played against all the opponents that it could have been played against, it's the division rival Bill Belichick-led New England Patriots that are on the back end of that kind of offensive performance in the playoffs. It's remarkable. It's absolutely remarkable. And I think there's, you know, what does it mean against Kansas City? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. That's the thing. It starts all over again. Because that Kansas City team is dangerous, too.
I know. And Don Larson, I mean, I'm just looking at his stats right now. I mean, terrible pitcher.
Yeah, right? I mean, you know, and then he's got immortalized to the one moment it came together.
Yeah, for his career, he was 81 of 91.
Yeah.
And he only had 850 strikeouts for his career.
And then he pitches a perfect game.
He pitches a perfect game in the World Series, and you're therefore immortalized. I was going to be, my jaw was going to drop. I thought, I was like, is he in the Hall of Fame? Thankfully, he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Not for that one moment.
Not for that.
Right?
Yeah, you know, but back then they were a little goofy. They might have put him in because it's a Yankee.
All right, coming up, I do want to make one thought on the Patriots sort of quote-unquote dynasty when we come back. It's Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call is presented by Rocket Mortgage. In a mortgage that fits your life, Rocket can. Quick question for you about the Patriots. Remember throughout the season we were talking about how when the Patriots were good and they were on like their, what, 7-game win streak, I think, midway through that, and we said, look, if the Patriots win this division and go in the deep in the playoffs, they don't need to win the Super Bowl because Brady didn't always go to a Super Bowl. But we could talk about the continuation of the Patriots dynasty with this sort of one COVID off year that they had, right? And I want to know now, can they still do that? Or did you think Saturday's loss ended one and they got to start another?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter.
Yeah.
You know, I think, I mean, the Brady Belichick era is done. And I think that's a dynasty on its own. I mean, we know, we've dissected that. I mean, that historians have dissected it. But, no,
but think about this. The Patriot dynasty could have continued if they had gone to, like, the AFC championship game.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, maybe it has. Let's think about this. I mean, you know, you take away, I mean, the only year lapse with playoffs was a COVID year.
Right. That's what I was saying, right?
Like, yeah.
We were willing to accept that if the Patriots had gone to the AFC title game this year, we could have said they're continuing the Patriot dynasty with this one blip on the radar being the time Brady left and COVID hit the NFL and they had opt outs and Cam Newton and all of that. But that's excusable.
Now,
right?
Can we push
that aside?
Can we say it's too soon to tell that they need another playoff appearance under Mac Jones?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, look, if they make another run next year, if Jones grows and some things get fixed or whatnot. But I'm curious about where they're going. I wonder if this is the year Josh McDaniels takes that second plunge in NFL head coaching. Gerard Mayo looks like he's going to be a candidate in Denver and Houston. It's one, you know, that coaching staff had lost guys and they've kept the machine going. But I wonder what the future is going to be like for them.